Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Ray! Do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock. Do the hammerlock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock.
Everybody's doing it. Hello. Hi friends, this is Chris Things Brian, and this is Wrestling Art with Chris Things. This is my little old podcast where I scream into the void. Possibly some people listen to it, I don't know. But it's generally where, as a proud wrestling artist, I talk a little bit of wrestling, a little bit of art. So today is the return of our Match of the Week series. Getting a little bit behind on this thing, but we're endeavouring to catch up here. We've got three matches of the week, this being three Sabu matches of the week. So we're doing our final kind of Sabu swan song, jumping back into it and just soaking up the magic that was the incredible homicidal, suicidal, genocidal maniac that was Sabu. And I'm very excited to be doing that with James Vanderbeek, the uncle of Beaks, my former co-host in the Grown Men Watch This Shit podcast. I'm very excited to be chatting it up with Jeremy. That'll be coming a little bit later, but in the meantime, we have our What's Been Going On in the World of Chris Things intro segment here, where I tell you a little bit about my life, what I've been having going on as a wrestling art dude, just kind of have a one-sided chat at your ear holes. But yeah, dude, I've come off like a pretty crazy period that was June and the start of this month with a lot of events, a lot of different shows and things, as I think I might have talked about in previous episodes. This is sort of the back to reality part where I'm getting back into a bit of the commission work and everything. We've had the big book launch. It's happened, guys. The new Way the Blade AEW edition. The book is out. It's up for order on Amazon right now. If you search for Way of the Blade AEW, it should come right up. It's a very exciting time. I've been seeing a bunch of people, show pictures of having it. It's, as I mentioned on the other episode where I really talked all about the release, it's still a weird feeling. But the weirdness extended this past week where I tried to do an Instagram post to convey these feelings. I put a lot of effort into it, tried to get the words just right, had some nice pictures and everything. And then the magical, wonderful people at Instagram, for whatever reason, flagged that post and did not let me get it up. Apparently, six people saw it. So if you're one of the six, you're very special. Because it decided that this was not going to be viewable to anyone else. So it's just showing there on my profile, but then anyone else who looks at it, it's invisible. So I don't know what the deal is. I tried to post it again today. Same deal, after even tweaking some stuff where I'm like, oh, okay, maybe that picture of Moxley being hanged by Adam Page in that Texas death match might have been a little bit too violent for Instagram. Removed that. Still not a thing. I don't know what's going on. I sent a message to the fine folks at Instagram. I have no expectation that an actual human is going to read that and get back to me, but we'll see how we go. In the meantime, I guess I just promoted on here. The post made it to my Facebook, so if you happen to be one of my Facebook friends, you can see it there. If not, you know, I don't know. I think it's just all the sentiment that I've explained on here before, so it's nothing you're missing out on. But if you would like the book, if that's your kind of thing, if you share a passion for those early years of AEW, and especially the more bloody side of their matches, and how they brought the blade back to mainstream American professional wrestling, I think you get a kick out of it. Phil's done a great job in writing this thing up. Jonathan did a great job of laying it out in a really interesting kind of way. A little bit of a departure from the first one in that sense, but I still think quite cool. And makes it a bit more kind of interactive, I guess. Of course, my illustrations are in there as well. And Phil's done some great little interviews that are interspliced throughout that are really cool. And some other match recommendations if you like this kind of stuff too. I'm very proud of what we did there, and I hope everyone enjoys. Other than that, it can be tricky in the life of an illustrator. This is one of the things that you don't really hear about. You have so many things that are on the boil at one time, and then you have different little bits and pieces that pause, so then you have to pivot over to do this, and then back to do that, and then... Yeah, man, it can be a little bit tricky when your brain's wired like mine is to sort of chop and change constantly like that. But you get used to it. You do your best. Sometimes like you just have a day where you're just feeling like things aren't clicking. You're feeling like the magic just isn't quite coming or whatever it is. I guess you can't be on at all times. I've been reading a lot about burnout of late. It seems to be the big trendy topic at the moment for creatives especially. I had a friend ask me about this the other day. Shout out Amy Crow, Forge Ford. Big recommend there. I love your writing. But I don't know. I don't think I'm burnt out. I think I still love what I'm doing, with all this stuff. And I put a lot of love in everything that I make, and I get a lot of enjoyment out of it. But sometimes, like I've said before on here, I just have to remind myself of that. So I don't know whether I'm just kind of like refusing to acknowledge the burnout, or whether I'm just like, no, that's pretend, or whether I'm just okay. I don't know. It's a weird thing to think about. But sometimes it gets hard, is what I'm trying to say. And when it gets hard, I think you need to do something to just change what you're doing, refresh your perspective. And what I did the other day, I like to go for little walks in the woods, or take the dogs for a walk. That kind of stuff can be really good. Get some fresh air. But for me, sometimes just like watching a wrestling match can completely reinvigorate my passions for this kind of stuff. Clearly I have a lot of passion for that and drawing wrestling and watching wrestling, so it's not that much of a surprise. But I fired up that latest Omni show, the Middle Atlantic Wrestling Omni Arena show, that was headlined by the tremendous Roddy Piper versus Buzz Sawyer dog collar match. Also had a really great Greg Valentine versus Pez Watley match. Awesome Larry Zbysko versus Ronnie Garvin match that I had so much love for. And just watching that just brought so much joy. And then I was like, you know what? I can draw now. I can make the things. So, yeah, I don't know if that's any sort of... advice that I would give anyone, but at least if you really love wrestling, then perhaps that can be a way to get back into a fun creating zone. I don't know. Yeah, guys, I think I've got a bit of a big one coming up. I got Lucha Fantastica Sydney in a few months that I'm very excited to be heading down to Sydney for. My partner Kaylin's going to be coming down with that for that one, and then we're gonna catch up with some pals afterwards for a little trip. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Honestly, getting to share that is a nice thing. Like, I feel like I do need to be able to do this stuff on my own, like in terms of doing these tabling and events and, you know, all that side of it. But it's nice when you have a bit of company. So I'm looking forward to that. And then after that, I got a fair bit more on, but christhings.com.au/events is the way you can go for that. But in the meantime, let's get into some Match of the Week action. Okay, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. We're back for another Match of the Week edition. I'm so very behind with these things, but we're doing our darndest to get caught up today. We've got three matches of the week that we're going to be discussing, three Sabu matches of the week, and three matches that I'm very excited to talk about with my dear old pal, Mr. Jeremy Tate, Uncle Vanderbeek. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Technically, would that mean this is matches of 3 weeks?
They were the matches of the week of each of those 3 weeks. But yes, I realize you're making a joke and I run right past it.
You know, I'm quite literal myself. It's the autism. We're a little tism in all of us, so yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, I think we're both a little struck by the tism.
Yes, indeed. Oh, by the way, I love the shirt. His designs are always the coolest. I've never watched a lot of his matches, and I can't even say his name correctly, so I never purchased one of the shirts. But please, indulge everyone. Let them know what you are wearing today.
Jun Kasai, the crazy monkey. People might remember him of CZW fame before his big renaissance in deathmatch wrestling recently. But the design is by a friend of mine, the very talented Ozawa-san, Sei Ozawa.
So sick.
A bunch of tremendous deathmatch art, a bunch of really cool Big Japan stuff, Freedoms. And yeah, he's done a lot of stuff with GCW and some American deathmatch things. So shout out to Ozawa-san, dude I'd love to have on the show at some point, but yeah.
It's a very sick design. I myself am wearing Road Warriors. I don't know who drew this, so I can't shout them out as quite well as you did. But yeah, Road Warriors, woo woo. Yeah, that's my shirt. How you doing, bud?
Oh man, I'm good. We just got through a little technical difficulty snafu, but it wouldn't be this show if it weren't for some technical difficulties, right? I always say I'd be so freaked out when this occasionally just works seamlessly. But anyway, on the audio front, if you maybe jump back a little bit from the microphone, it gets a bit scratchy when you're a bit on the closer side.
Sure. Is that better?
That is much better, in fact.
All right, fantastic.
I think so. Anyway, yeah, dude, I've been good. I've been busy. I'm just sort of on the other side of having like a million in-person events and different group shows and shit, where I was kind of losing my mind, being quite the absentee partner, you know, when I get really stressed out with all of the things that are due. But yeah, I feel like I'm on the other side of it, and my relationship is better for it.
Oh, yeah, you're well aware of it's occurring, so that's the first step. You could be the one that's oblivious, like, oh, I'm being a terrible partner, and I'm unaware of it. So, yeah, you're at least working through it. I myself have been very busy as well. I've had four shows in, something like that, like in a month and a half, four wrestling shows. I know that's not a lot for most people, but we normally only run once a month, so it's been quite a bit of shows for us. We did a Brewfest, which was 2 days in a row, which was super rad. Awesome. Got to walk around and drink free beer and then entertain the fans. We were the only entertainment, so all these drunk people were required to either go drink more or watch the wrestling. So a lot of people chose to watch the wrestling.
Tremendous. That's what you want, a captive audience of drunks. That's indeed always the best audience for me.
100%, especially when you're not like trying to entertain wrestling fans, you're just trying to bring new people in.
Mm, Tremendous.
Yeah.
It's good to be busy. I think I sometimes the depression kind of creeps in for me when I'm not on the busy side and you just have time to dwell on all that kind of stuff. But it's a double edged sword.
Indeed. Have you considered medication? Because I feel tremendous. I'm not depressed. Like, the only thing that's depressed me recently is having to put my cat down, and that's, like, it to be expected. But outside of that, nothing's bumming me out, buddy. Like, yeah, feeling good. I was worried that I would not be in touch with my regular emotions besides depression when I started medicating, but no, that's not an issue. It's only canceling that shit out.
Tremendous.
I feel happiness, and I'm a single man enjoying life, and it's fucking great.
Dude, tremendous. It sounds like it is exactly how it is meant to go.
It's wild, huh? For you. Yeah. I've been getting tattooed. So I've gotten, my friend Nicole has been hooking me up. She does these, one particular design for charity, and she hooked me up with, it's a bat holding a slice of pizza, and it's like the size of my fucking calf, dude. It's enormous, and it's fucking rad. But yeah, I've been getting tattoos, and I got a tattoo for Hudson, his paw print, deceased cat. Yeah. And then, in 2 weeks, I'm going to get my other hand tattooed. I'm saying tattoo just because it's funny. I'm going to get La Parca's mask with some roses around it.
Heck yeah.
So yeah, I think it's going to look
just so everyone knows, probably one of the most confusing gimmicks for North American fans there is. But can I ask, which iteration are we dedicating this to?
Well,
we've got three now.
I'm a fan of the original La Parca.
Hey.
Yeah. LA Park, formerly. Yeah, but I'm going to go with the La Parca mask because I still... the La Parca mask is fucking dope. But yeah, LA Park is my guy. WCW Lucha. You know how affectionate I feel about that run. It changed my fucking world, buddy.
Right there with you, my dude. I think that La Parca in WCW, for our first side tangent of the evening, is, I was thinking about this recently, he was never a guy that was really pushed. He was never a guy that particularly got any like real semblances of like a push or that many wins. I think the biggest push he had was when they were doing the bit where, I don't know what that voice was for him.
Yeah, somebody else was speaking for him.
Yeah, that tremendous, like, black dude voice. That was pretty rad.
Yeah, I love that shit, dude. Wait, who came first? Was Kayentai first, or was that gimmick first? Because Kayentai did the same gimmick.
I want to say La Parca had it first.
Okay, because then let's say the OG La Parca with that OG gimmick. Yeah, the La Parca that we are speaking about later is the second one, right? Or is that the first one?
So the second one is, yeah, the one after he quit AAA.
Yeah, but the one that in the match we're watching later?
That is the first one, indeed, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure. No wonder he's
that
such a fucking badass.
That is probably one of the last times that he was actually promoted as La Parca, as luck would have it as well.
Perfect, because holy shit. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. I fucking love that match, dude. Loved it.
So good. Sabu versus La Parca, first time ever in MLW.
Holy shit.
Good. Yeah, man. But yeah, just in general on the La Parca thing.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating looking back because, like, in general, I guess you could say that kind of about the WCW Cruiserweight division, just, like, guys that were so much more over than their push warranted. However, you look at some of them, like, Dean Malenko got a real strong bloody push. He got, like, a lot of, like, big wins, and they got a lot of, like, a lot more time than, you know, like, WWE would dedicate to the Cruiserweight division for their matches. Some of those sick, like, Ultimo Dragon, Ray Jr., Psychosis matches got, like, 15 to 20 minutes on pay-per-view.
And then amazing matches from, like, Malenko and Mysterio was awesome, and then fucking... when Malenko would do that, throw any luchador, he's on the top rope, throws him and does a gut buster. Like, oh, what? It's amazing. And you can only do that to a little guy. So thank you, luchadors.
But yeah, the magic of La Parca was that he was sort of like part of a cast of dudes, and like one of the most memorable and fun ones, because he always found a way to get over no matter what little thing he was doing, which is part of his magic. But yeah, a dude who was like so over, and I feel like has such a positive memory in so many people's minds about that period of WCW, despite never really getting pushed whatsoever. It's almost like he was over in spite of how much they actually pushed him, which I always love.
Dude, if people, if you say La Parca, people are like, oh, you mean the chairman of WCW? He's like, yeah, we do mean that guy. Like, he got the chair over so huge, either just walking with it, playing guitar on it, dancing with it, or standing on it with one leg up like a fucking Captain Morgan. The guy was incredible. Charisma for days.
Oh my gosh, anytime I ever stand atop a chair, I know who's popping into my mind.
Yeah,
we should
sure.
have him on like the workplace health and safety like warnings of like
yeah, don't stand on chairs, it's bad. Oh, and then geez. Also the gift that'll live forever of Disco dancing to the ring and La Parca just coming up from behind and just clubbing the shit out of him. Ah, you gotta love it.
One that gets better and better as time goes on and Disco becomes more and more detestable in everyone's opinion.
And you know what? I'll never tell Glenn this. He did entertain me in WCW, but I will on online, I will always say, you never entertained a motherfucker in the world. But he did.
Yeah, I'll begrudgingly say he was definitely...
No, I'm not giving the satisfaction, Chris.
When that music hit, like when you're watching Nitro...
Disco Fever! Disco Fever! 100%. Again, I'll never tell him, but I'll admit it to myself and you. And the thousands of listeners we have here.
Thousands! Packed to the rafters in this podcast.
They're throwing babies. They're throwing babies to the ceiling.
Oh, dude. Yeah, man. So I guess today, looking at the collection of matches is a Sabu collection. After Sabu's passing, that, you know, we spoke about, you know, on the last show that we did where we talked about his last ever match. You know, I went down a Sabu rabbit hole and I just was like watching Sabu matches, and that's the main reason why this gimmick ended up the way it did. Because I just, you know, generally speaking, this match of the week thing is just my favorite thing that happened to watch that week. And for those 3 weeks, I was pretty well watching all Sabu matches. and it was a delightful time. And yeah, man, like now we're a little bit more removed, and it's the way these things normally happen, you know, it's like you get a lot of talk, a lot of articles and obituaries and everything. I was doing some research today and he had like a New York Times article, LA Times, I assume that's the big newspaper over there. Yeah, I think he had one in that as well. And a bunch of ones in a variety of places, a bunch of Australian, news websites did obituaries for
Sabu.
So it was quite fascinating to me, like looking back, that, you know, a dude that kind of was like a celebrated icon for like the hardcores, you know, us like wrestling weirdos that like the real, you know, that deep tape collecting.
I was gonna say tape trader motherfuckers.
Yeah, us grimy dudes getting our mix all
fucking marks. Just kidding, pals.
Smart Max,
the Smart Max.
Oh, dude, I remember a time when that was something sort of to be celebrated. Not so much anymore.
I'm a smark. Like, if anybody said that to me, I'm like, get the fuck out of here, dude. I actually, little side tangent, when that was becoming really popular on Twitter and shit, I'm like, I created the phrase smunt, which is smart mark cunt. So smunts. If anybody calls themselves a smark, in reality, they're a smunt.
Oh, dude. I mean, there was that weird period, especially with, like, the early days of ROH, where it was, like, such a... like you
ROH, robots, shows. The robot fans.
Oh, man. Like, those shows were just wild. It's, like, not a woman in sight, just all dudes, like, in their like, 20s to 30s.
With their niche chance trying to get over with the people in the fucking crowd. Annoying the shit out of the wrestlers, but trying to get attention on themselves. Oh, fuck.
And our king was the most annoying of them all, Green Lantern fan.
Or who was that fucker at PWG that just kept on, Super Dragon! To the point where Super Dragon was like, fuck you, dude, stop! Stop! Ah, so good.
But yeah, like there was a weird time where, and I still think if you get past the, you know, bullshit of the Smart Mark fan thing, there was something that was cool about being part of that, that group of tape traders, of like hardcore wrestling fans when it like wasn't such a thing now, where it just feels like it's really changed with the world of Twitter and everything, and how everyone is like, being an internet wrestling fan isn't even necessarily the same thing, you know? It's sort of like, everyone's an internet wrestling fan, right?
Yep. That's how people consume wrestling. Literally, if you're not watching the show, you are consuming wrestling via social media clips and reels. That's how it's working.
Yeah, which is okay. Like, I'm not here trying to, you know, be the dude to be like, hey, back in my day, Sonny. Maybe I am.
Dude, even the companies are leaning that way. Dude, companies are deliberately doing stuff just to make it clips. They're definitely realizing that things in reels get them attention. So, yeah, they're leaning into it.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess where I'm going with this is that part of being getting into that, like, murkier levels of wrestling to me, and, like, getting into, like, I still remember buying wrestling magazines, and, yeah, getting these, like, tapes that were, like, a copy of a copy of a copy with the most blurry, fucking shitty, questionable quality on them, like a weird pink tone going on, and like fuzzy bits. And
I never got into it, but I've heard stories. I can only imagine. You're like, I finally got fucking all these old Sasuke matches, and they're fucking so blurry as fuck.
Oh, dude, man, that was so part of the idea of Sabu was right at the center of all this shit. I mean, that's where I was going with it. Like, most of these tapes that I'd get, you know, Best of Sabu has like all these early 90s matches, like those rad ones he had against like Sean Waltman, like the Lightning Kid, like those ones they had in the different Midwest Indies and things. And you just watch these things, the most terrible quality. But that was part of the mystique almost. And then Sabu was a dude who sort of bridged that from these like, you know, mid 90s tape trading hardcores. To then becoming a dude who's now, you know, he's passed, sort of like definitely pretty well everyone would know of Sabu. So it's kind of fascinating.
He was legitimately, and the phrase is thrown around pretty loosely these days, but a living legend. Like, say what you will about his own personal philosophies on other stuff, but the guy, as far as wrestling, has changed wrestling entirely. Like, when he showed up on Raw and jumped off the Raw sign, it was like one of the craziest thing anyone who's a wrestling fan has ever seen, legitimately, because Vince McMahon would not let that shit happen. That was not gonna happen. He tried to duplicate that kind of stuff with like Hawk getting pushed off the Titantron, but still, Sabu pressed the boundaries and was tremendous, and a huge part of that ECW invasion. And when you first saw him, you're like, who the fuck is this guy? Yeah. And a lot of times you're like, the best part about him is you don't know whether or not he's going to fucking pull off something amazing or fuck up entirely. And that was his mystique.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was like something that he would do on purpose. You know, you hear these like different interviews from different people. I was listening to Lance Storm talk a little bit about him on Observer Radio a few weeks back. And Lance would tell these great stories how he would just like purposely like plan a fuck up spot in the match and be like, we'll get him, brother. And then Lance is like, oh, great. We'll convince them that we're not very good at wrestling. Wonderful.
Yeah. But here's the thing, like, in a real fight, not every punch lands. Like, tell me that in a real fight, somebody's going to go run and jump off a rope and successfully do a leg drop every single fucking time. No, that's not going to happen.
Oh, so, man, 100%, and it's, like, such a wild thing to think about, because you said, the idea of, like, planning a fuck-up spot is wild.
I wouldn't believe it. I wouldn't believe it until I found out. I wouldn't have believed it until I heard it.
Same. Except you watch it, and, like, my memories of Sabu, the reason why he stands out so much more to me is because he was a dude where it's exactly like you're saying, you didn't know whether it would fuck up or it would, you know, go off.
Be the most back to, yeah.
And it would give you, made me have like so much more like respect for it in the moment, you know, it made me like have so much more of appreciation of like, fuck yeah, you know, where rather than today, everything's like so polished and done so much more safely, that it just doesn't have the same sort of like punk rock, like this dude may die kind of like atmosphere. And it was that real danger that I think really separated Sabu from everyone else and everyone who's then come after him. You mentioned about like his influence, obviously hugely influential with like table spots and like doing all these like crazy dives and shit. I mean, you could say whether that's like for the better or for the worse, but regardless, he was the original dude that like started all that shit.
And advancements sometimes mean that bad shit has to happen. Like, there's going to be casualties when things try to be brought into a new horizon. And Sabu, maybe he did influence some people to do some pretty insane things, but I think we're all better for it. And then my favorite thing about Sabu is, like, sometimes he'd have to reset spots because he knew, like, technically he wasn't going to hit it at the time, but he did it so quickly that it never made his opponents look like total assholes. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, oh, shit, no, wait, recovery. And then nails it. So, yeah, Sabu is tremendous. And, oh, yeah, I'm not even just kissing the ass because he passed away. I would have said this at the other time. Regardless of who a person is overall, you cannot deny their impact on wrestling. Like, Hulk Hogan, piece of shit. You cannot deny his impact on professional wrestling. It's just reality of the matter.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, man. It was back when I was like wrestling a million years ago. It was my dream. Like, there was one time we were going to do this show where I was actually going to be booked to, like, wrestle Sabu, and they were going to, like, bring him over and shit, and it was...
Holy shit.
Like, probably just, like, one of those all-timer, kind of like, this would have been the coolest thing I ever did.
Fuck yes, dude.
And, it, you know, as most of these things happen, it, like, fell apart or never happened or whatever the heck what it was. But, yeah, man, like, I think there was a lot of people, you know, I was talking to a dude at one of the shows I did recently, Sid Parker, and he actually had that happen, but he actually got to wrestle Sabu. So he, in BCW down in Melbourne, they brought him out a few times, and they had some crazy awesome matches. He wrestled Mad Dog as well, which is pretty sick.
I remember Mad Dog.
Yeah, but yeah, Sid had amazing things to say about, like, you know, putting the match together with Sabu, just how, like, nice and kind and giving he was, and, you know, just, like, one of the greatest sweethearts that he ever wrestled. On a personal basis, in a world where you get all these, like, big-time guys come in, wrestle in fucking Australia, most of the time they're going to, like, big league you or whatever. Apparently complete opposite from Sabu.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't hear anyone, I mean, regardless of the things he said on Twitter, again, I'm not trying to defame the guy. He definitely said crazy stuff on Twitter, but everyone who's interacted with him, as far as I can, thought he was an amazing, kind, and gentle soul. Like, that is true. Like, I didn't see anyone say, why I had an interaction with Sabu where he was a piece of shit. Everyone's like, the guy was checked in on me, made sure I was okay. Yeah, it's a weird dichotomy. Like, people are so not singular. It's like, I'm just, sometimes I come to grips with this shit. Like, I'm very black and white a lot of the times, but you realize there are so many shades of gray, and sometimes you have to, like, take that into account.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. Like, generally speaking, I always say in the world of wrestling, 90% of people are going to be, you know,
100% pieces of shit. 90% of times they're going to be 100% pieces of shit.
But I think there is a lot of areas of gray and a lot of real sweethearts to be found as well. But
for sure.
Even his, like, zany, you know, like, later days on Twitter had some stuff that I would adore. You know,
he was also funny too.
The most insane shit. Like, my favorite, I think it was the last one that I remember seeing while he was still alive. As from maybe even as a thing from his retirement, someone got this, like, Sabu tattoo. I'm not sure if you saw.
Oh,
this.
Yes, I did. Holy shit.
So proud of this tattoo, tagged Sabu in it and everything. This motherfucker went and got this, like, Sabu tattoo that I actually thought was pretty rad. And Sabu apparently did not.
He buried the shit out of it. Like, I think he said something to the fact it's the worst tattoo he's ever seen.
Like, I would have got my money back, brother.
Honestly, it's a cool drawing. I wouldn't have put that on my skin. And I have some crazy tattoos. Oh, that was so good. Yes. Twitter, such an amazing place.
Man. Oh. But so we got three Sabu matches to talk about today.
Let me start off by saying,
please.
I had seen one of these matches before, and it had legitimately fucked me up so bad that I couldn't bear myself to watch it again, Chris. And you might know which one it is. I couldn't watch fucking him and Terry Funk again, because I watched it twice, and that's enough for me. And that's a lot. And you understand where I'm coming from, right?
I do. I would say that is the, and I've seen a lot of gnarly shit, I would say that is officially the most violent professional wrestling match that I've ever seen. And
thank
I'll say
you.
Why when we talk about the match, and
please.
I'm uncomfortable, and I can I know exactly what you're talking about. But yeah,
yes.
I can completely understand that.
Okay, thank you. Because I legitimately did look at the list, and I watched them in order the way you posted them, and I'm like, oh, I'm not watching that. I am not watching that. I'm sorry. I'm glad it was the last one, too, because like, I was all prepared to watch another Sabu match. I'm like, nope. No thank you, friends.
All right. So
I have the DVD too, by the way. I had to show. I watched it the one time, and then I showed somebody, and that was enough. All right, let's go on.
All right, so our matches in question, match of the week 87, 88, and 89. The first one being the match that we briefly introduced earlier, Sabu versus La Parka / LA Park. This was a really interesting period because it was sort of the crossover point from LA Park into the birth of the Wild Man LA Park character, I guess, that he would go on to become so infamous for. But this one took place on December 20th, 2002 at MLW during their wonderful ECW nostalgia period that I was a big fan of back in the day. The King of Kings event in one of their famous ECW venues, the old War Memorial in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Always wanted to see a wrestling show there. Sadly, I never ended up being able to do it. I think it's been renovated and it looks nothing like it used to back in these days.
Shame.
But yeah, tremendous match between Sabu and La Parka that I think would surprise a lot of people.
Dude, I legitimately got MLW. I mean, I like the MLW show, but I didn't think these guys were going to pull this shit out for this show. And holy shit, I was blown away. One of the bloodiest affairs, one of the most aggressive, intense affairs. And I want to start off by saying, probably the most in shape I've ever seen Sabu ever. Joey Styles put him over a bunch of times for how ripped he was. But the first thing I saw when this guy walked on the screen, like, Sabu is fucking ripped. He was fucking jacked.
He was just roided out of his mind at this point.
It was ridiculous. Man. I was like, holy fuck, that's the same guy? And he wrestled a totally different style out the gate. Like, it was pretty mat-based for a good, strong minute or two. Like, I think the first 5 minutes, legitimately.
Yeah. It was so fascinating to see and think back. So this is... after, you know, obviously Sabu's ECW run has come to a close. ECW's gone out of business about a year and change prior to this. I think he was still sporadically doing stuff in Japan, but mainly, I guess, focusing on the indies at this point. And MLW at this time was one of the key, like, you know, big indie promotions, I guess you'd say, with Ring of Honor. Maybe like 3PW was still going at this point. I mean, do you have much of a recollection of those, like that indie scene back at that time?
100%. You're 100% accurate. I think, was this before like our Jersey All Pro? Well, no, Jersey All Pro was pretty hot at this point in time as well.
Yeah.
But MLW, like when I first started working for them, Court sent me a bunch of humble brag. Yeah, I used to do a podcast for those fucks. Court sent me like some fucking DVDs of their early stuff. And one of my favorite moments was, and I'm sure you've seen this, that essentially quadruple or four jump that Sanjay Dutt does. He jumps from one rope to another rope because there's two rings next to each other. He jumps on four ropes and then does a fucking somersault, lands on fuckers. Like, MLW was doing some crazy shit at that time, honestly.
Dude, hybrid wrestling.
Hybrid wrestling. Oh, hang on, side tangent. That douchebag Goldberg wanted his wrestling name to be hybrid at one point. Just the word hybrid. What?
I never heard that before.
He wanted his wrestling gimmick name just to be hybrid. Like, guy, that's like a concept. It's not a name.
I think they made the right call in just going with Goldberg.
His actual
personally.
Name.
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep going into the mic.
That wouldn't have been too out of place in the delightful sort of late 90s ridiculous name.
Hybrid.
What were the names of what was the
Rage and Chaos
team?
Yeah, I knew you were talking about. Dude, so these are, what were the names? Like, yeah, Rage and Chaos, motherfucker.
What was that tag team name? Like,
High Voltage.
That was it. Hot Electricity, Missed Opportunity.
Like, two short, like, incredibly jacked dudes. Kenny Chaos and... Oh, what was Rage's first name? It was Kenny Chaos and... I know it wasn't alliteration. Ah, who cares? They sucked.
Tremendous. Yeah.
You're talking about how great MLW was at the time. ECW...
Yeah, sort of ECW nostalgia meets, like, all of the dudes who were doing hot, cool shit on the indies at that point were kind of breaking out, getting the, like, the, you know, Punk, Samoa Joe doing stuff there, Homicide, Chris Daniels, AJ Styles, like...
I legit didn't know this match even existed, dude. I did not know this happened. I'm so happy that you introduced me to this.
Oh, dude, I really enjoyed it because I had fond memories of it back in the day. And then when I was going through my, like, Sabu rabbit hole, you know, I did a rewatch of it. And it's one of those ones that's, like, even better than you remember. Like, they reached a real crazy level of intensity. The crowd was, like, that famous sort of, like, ECW smarky crowd where they kind of started out being like, all right, fucking impress me, motherfuckers. Like,
oh, when they did the you fucked up chant, I was like, you fucks, you motherfuckers, shut the fuck up. But I'm like, this was the heyday of that shit. Like, wrestling fans at that point in time were bloodthirsty and unforgiving. If you fucked up a spot at all, they were all over your ass.
I mean, these were the same assholes.
Regrettable.
When Kojima was MLW champion at this time, and he wrestled in this venue against that Mike Awesome, these fuckers chanted Hiroshima at him. So,
oh my god!
Like, I will put these people over to a certain point, but there was definitely some of them that were not good people.
There's one guy in the back going Nagasaki. No, buddy. Come on, we're all doing the Hiroshima thing. Didn't you notice? Motherfucks. All right. So, yeah, as we mentioned, like, started off with a lot of grappling. I have to admit that when they traded off camel clutch spots right at the very beginning, like, one did the camel clutch and they repositioned it, the other one got the camel clutch on, legitimately made me laugh.
Oh, man. This was such a weird, again, that sort of hybrid wrestling kind of deal, because we saw, like, Parker, like, did a lot of the sort of, like, classic, like, La Parker kind of spots, and that sort of, like, lucha star with, like, sort of a little bit of comedy meets sort of, like, those, then eventually into the more the full-on, like, lucha bloodbath kind of, like, style.
Like, legitimate violence.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Sabu, just, they really work together. Sometimes you see two dudes and you're just like, I'm not sure if that would, you know, necessarily, like, this would work together, but this just was one of those beautiful surprises that just worked so darn well.
It married so well. The chemistry was off the charts, honestly. And I think a lot of it had to do with La Parca's selling, and maybe he wasn't selling a lot of times because he got bloodied like crazy. And sometimes when you're bleeding like mad, you react in a different way. But seriously, one of the bloodiest affairs I've seen. And
dude,
the offense... Scissors got stabbed into a man's head to help cut open the mask. But even before that happened, a lot of the shit was super snug. Like, they were not pulling punches, so to speak.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Yeah, everything looked really good. Some, like, awesome, like, dives to the crowd. Like, just, this just hit so perfectly. And then, yeah, once it got, like, gnarly and bloody, it, like, went to, like, a whole nother level. And, Park just bled like a bloody stuck pig, as they say, man.
And he realized this was the case because he kept on, as he had put his head down, put his bare forearms underneath his head so his forearms would keep getting covered in blood. I'm sure that was intentional. The man's a fucking worker. Yeah, it was beautiful. And before anyone started bleeding, back to these fans. These fuckers started chanting for tables within 5 minutes. Like, I had, we want tables. Like, good God, dude, let them tell a fucking story.
Calm down. You'll likely get them, but we don't. 100%. You know, come on.
That's a crescendo. That's a crescendo. Over in SOS, if somebody brings out a table or a door, we always chant. Island door, like one on commentary, like say you came out with a door, I would say this man has an island door, and the fans would say island door because it's a big deal for the shit to happen. You don't chant for that shit 5 minutes out the gate. Ugh, gross.
Yeah. But yeah, this just developed into something that I think was more than anyone was expecting. And it just hit like a peak level of like something was sort of like created in the moment that I don't think anyone really, you know, thought it was going to be that, but it just ended up being this magical thing. So I'd highly recommend everyone check it out. And yeah, there's some amazing visuals in this that made it quite difficult for me to pick for the illustration that I sent through earlier, but something about La Parca covered in blood, where he's like reaching and doing like the no, no, sir, I will not be tapping out here today.
Not today.
That really tickled me.
All right, I want to address a couple things on here that I mentioned or I noted. Oh. So there was the spot that I knew this match was going to be something special is when La Parca got on the top rope and jumped out over the guardrail onto Sabu. Then I'm like, okay, all right, I'm in for some fucking awesome here. And then there was the, let me see what I put here. The fuck, he jumps over the top rope, does a somersault, looking to splash Sabu, who was on the table, but overshoots the table, barely grazes it, breaking it barely, and lands his full body weight on concrete. What a fucking crazy motherfucker. Oh, holy
is
shit.
Is that the one where it looks like his leg like hits the
Yeah, he started selling it 100%. He started selling his leg like it was fucking broken. Yeah. And then there was another moment. All right, Sabu, there was a point in the match where he was like selling like crazy. Like he looked like super beat up. And then La Parca would kick him. He would like no sell the kick, jump up and start beating the shit out of him. Like, and then realize, oh no, I'm really fucking in pain. And start selling again. And then he'd get kicked again. No sell that shit. Fucking start beating him up. Oh no, I'm super in pain again. Like, ah, beautiful. I haven't seen Sabu with this most interesting selling, because normally he's just spot to spot to spot to spot, not a lot of selling. I love this match, Chris. Thank you.
So good. Was that the bit where I really I'm brought back to the memories of those these great like really lucha style soccer kicks that,
yeah,
La Parca was doing to Sabu?
Yeah.
Just these like short like ones that were just incredible.
And he just popped up and started beating the crap out of him and like, no, wait, those things hurt real bad. And fall back down. Yeah. Ah, great. Good shit. Let me see. The finish. The leg drop onto a fucking chair.
Oh, the Arabian face buster.
Yes.
So good.
I agree. Tremendous. And they shook hands. So beautiful sportsmanship.
And we would lead on to them. We have a rematch down the road that they have in 2003 in MLW that I haven't seen yet. I don't think it's quite as good as this one, but I'm definitely
keen to
give it a watch.
How could it be?
Yeah, this was lightning in a bottle, brother. Incredible stuff.
It's unfortunate sometimes when guys have such great matches that people are like, well, we gotta guess that one, run that one back. And the guy's like, guys, we fucking did everything we could fucking think of that one. Like, the Samoa Joe series comes to mind. Like, Samoa Joe and Punk 1, so good. And you're like, oh, they're gonna try to do that again, huh? Oh, shit, this one's also good. And then Joe and Punk 3 might have been the best one of all of them. Like, that rarely happens, right?
It's like the Godfather series of wrestling matches, in a way.
Except for no, because the Godfather 3 sucked fucking balls.
Well, you still get the first two are really good. And then three is only saved in that, like, the original release of it, completely shit. But if you ever watch the Coda recut of it, that actually is quite good.
That's what people need to do. Not watch the movie that they actually release. Release the other one. Like when Donnie Darko came out, like, you could really enjoy if you actually read the recap of what the director said it was all about. Like, I don't need to do that. Like, please tell me.
Hey, you could say the same thing for Apocalypse Now and Blade
Runner. The Redux!
Yeah, the original thing releases on both of those sucked, but then the recuts later on, the longer versions, were much better.
I've always seen Apocalypse Now Redux, and it was amazing, so I'm going to have to, I guess, agree.
I think that is the version, yeah.
Yeah, it's so, so good. It's so good. All right, yeah. Continue. Let's go.
All right. So now we're on to our Sabu match number two. We're up to... So this was, I think, when I was doing some research for the wrestling club, because I really wanted to have a great Sabu tribute match for that month's wrestling club. And as part of doing this research, I came across a match that I had never seen before. So I've seen my share of Cactus Jack versus Sabu matches, a bunch of their famed ones in ECW from late 94, 95, amazing stuff. I think maybe even some of their other stuff that they've done on the indies, but I'd never seen this one in particular. So this was a match that took place on October 29th, 1994, for the National Wrestling Conference, the NWC, brother, at the Silver Nugget Pavilion in Las Vegas, Nevada. It was a Desert Death Falls Count Anywhere match between Sabu and Cactus Jack that took place in a casino, and I enjoyed this for a variety of reasons. I am very intrigued to talk about it with you, my friend.
Brother, I love the shit out of this match, too. Not for the same reasons I loved the last one, but I honestly did enjoy the wrestling, but everything that was around with, like, the commentators were,
man, so good.
Like, so simultaneously good and bad, which made it so great. They said, I've got notes, there's a couple things they said were so funny. But yes, just so good, and a match that starts quite hot out the gate, because Sabu just tees off on Foley. But I've noted on here that Foley looked in tremendous shape. How great did Mick look in this fucking match?
Yeah, he looked fucking great. This is, I guess, when he was, like, real motivated. He after the WCW run concluded, and he's like, you know what? I'm gonna prove to everyone, you know, how good I am. And he had this crazy run where he was just working everywhere. I guess he was doing a lot of stuff with, like, IWA in Japan at this point as well. Yeah,
man. I really enjoyed this match, especially because the setting was so classic wrestling. Like, the crowd was quintessential wrestling fans who may even not realize this shit is a work, brother, because there was a bunch of old ladies who did not want to clear the area when they were near danger. Like, there's a spot where they Foley puts, I think, either Foley puts Sabu through a table or vice versa. You know, those are the two guys in the match, so clearly that's the case. But there's an old lady who was sitting right there, initially did not move until they started doing the suplex, and she's like, oh my god! And she started running away. It was so amazing.
I adore it. Wasn't there also, like, an old man that Cactus tried to, like, steal his umbrella?
His cane? No, his cane.
And, like, the old man was just like, fuck no. No,
I need this motherfucker game, you dirty heel wrestler. But you know, it's funny, nowadays a fan would be like, holy shit, my cane is gonna get used in the match, take my cane, take my fake leg, take anything, here's my fake eyeball, please.
Oh my gosh, it's so much to love. Yeah, the setting was the same sort of, like, independent wrestling setting that I imagine, like, back in the day you bought a ticket to see, like, Honky Tonk Man versus King Kong Bundy in the main event. Maybe we've got Jimmy Snuka on the card. We're going to do some chants on how he murdered someone. You know, like, that beautiful period that we had there really captured up a lot of it. All right. So, after a tremendous amount of more audio technical difficulties...
What are you talking about? Everything was totally fine. It happened.
Yeah, smooth as silk, baby. We're back to continue talking about the tremendous Sabu versus Cactus Jack casino match, and we were just, I believe, reminiscing about just our fondness of the entire crowd and the great commentary, and I also really love the graphics. So good.
My favorite part is there appeared to be one cameraman who was allowed to film this show, because when they tried to get back to areas where Foley and Sabu were fighting either near the concession stand or within the casino, we got brief glimpses of what was going on and a lot of backs of fans as the cameraman tried to push his way through. Like, these fans were like, no, I don't give a fuck if you're trying to film this thing. We're trying to watch this thing.
Yeah, I mean, respect. It should be about the crowd in person, I say. But I really adored when we, especially, I think my favorite part of the match was when we went upstairs into the actual casino area with the blackjack going on, with the slot machines. Clearly a lot of people that were just like, what the fuck is going on right now? We got told on commentary that there was a pile driver on a blackjack table. We didn't actually see it.
At the time, the footage they actually showed, Mick Foley was punching Sabu in the head as they called a pile driver on the table. Like, I am not sure. But yeah, there was like, on commentary, one time the guy goes, there's popcorns flying, hot dogs flying. This is like classic wrestling commentary where it doesn't make any sense. It's just in the moment and vibes, and it's fucking great.
I assume also maybe there was just a lot of this stuff that wasn't actually captured on film because there was 100%. Stuff behind someone that refused 100%. To move out of the way.
Actually, at one point, the one commentator claimed the other guy had run back to watch the action, but clearly he was still sitting next to the man. Like, he had not moved at all. It was so great.
Is there a chance this commentary was done in post? I don't know.
You know what? Now that you say that, it only 100% was. But why did he call the fucking pile driver spot then?
Maybe he remembered seeing it in person. I don't know.
He actually was there. Yeah, that's when Foley piled around him. I better call that.
Oh, man. I don't know who either of these commentators were, but they were just delightful in every way. Like you said, that cheesiness meets just like it was bad, it was good, it was everything. It was everything.
One of the commentator goes, he's risking limb and body and everything known to mankind. Like, Mick Foley was not risking everything known to mankind, but he was mankind. So
maybe this guy
he said something poignant and unaware future. This guy, it was premonition. That's what it was. It was premonition.
Well, we don't know how long in post it was done. Maybe it was like one of those Joey Styles, like, ECW re-releases of footage that was filmed years earlier, and he snuck in some really, you know, sneaky little references in there, perhaps. Who knows?
I really like when the guy goes, this match is sadistical, which is not a word, but I like it.
I also feel like giving shout-outs to the commentary. I really love how many times they shoehorned the NWC into there.
Yes, 100%. Definitely... Actually, you know what? Respect to these guys putting over the company that they work for. I respect it.
I never thought that the NWC or the National Wrestling Conference would stay with me as much as it has, but thanks to these guys, I don't think I will ever forget it.
Dude, when at one point in the match, Foley did the spot, you know, where he lost his ear. He got caught in the ropes by his head. The way that this spot ended was the best way I've ever seen. Sabu did the leap off the chair and did a leg drop onto Foley's head, which spit him out of the ropes. Like, if he had not lost his head his ear the first time, it would have been that time.
Oh, man, that whole spot was, yeah, for me too, the greatest I've ever seen it. Like, I think they did similar things of this in some of their other matches. There's a really great ECW match that they had in one of the, like, I don't know, Hamburg or something like that, where it's the one where he's trying to, like, break the bottle over his head, and he ends up hitting him about 16 times in an attempt to finally break it, one of my real favorite ECW matches. But then none of them that they do this spot as perfectly as this. So that was the reason why I chose this for the illustrative moment of the match. But yeah, I was pretty stoked how this came off. The actual spot itself was just tremendous. And I mean, it's like really captures both of their, you know, like personal magical vibes. Like I always loved when Foley would, that was kind of his signature for a while. He'd do that twisty, get stuck in the ropes, gimmick spot. And then obviously, yeah, the big old Air Sabu, man. And the chair as well. Always just love seeing Sabu jump off of chairs.
100%. Like, there was a couple triple jumps that he did in this one, besides the moonsault, that were super cool. And then the other match, too. The moment I liked in this one was just... I'm not sure if it was an intentional spot, but at one point, Sabu tried to pin Foley on the actual... Or no, Foley tried to pin Sabu on the actual ground. Two count. Then they repositioned, they were on the table, and the referee refused to count the three because his back was on the actual table. So he pushed him very barely so his shoulders were on the actual ground and tried to do the three count again. Two. Only two.
Respect to the referee.
Yeah, 100%. I loved it. I loved it.
Oh man, this was just a wild and
do I pay too much attention? Do I pay too much attention to wrestling, Chris?
No, just enough, just enough. Yeah, this was just so much fun. It was like a thrill ride, and I just enjoyed every moment of it. And it felt really satisfying as well to watch some of these like Sabu Cactus brawls were just kind of like meander a bit, but this one really felt like everything kind of like. It was chaos, but it was beautiful chaos.
I liked how at the end of the match, like the commentators knew that the way we close out every Sabu match is Sabu has to put himself through a table. He will put himself through a table, and they set a table up, and Sabu just does a moonsault and drives his knees through it. Like, what a maniac! Like his crescendo for every match is putting himself through a table.
And the crowd loved it. The crowd was like, oh, they were dead.
They were stoked. Like, this asshole's gonna put himself through a table. Fuck yeah!
It's like the encore. You know, you come back out through the curtain. It's like, you know what? Moonsault through a table for you guys. Thank you very much. Everyone drive home safe.
That superhuman would do it. Superhuman do it. He would say, fuck yeah, this is for all my juggalos and juggalettes. Whoop whoop. Fuck this shit.
Yeah, this I loved very, very much. A nice little deep cut if anyone wants to find it. This is one of those great things about YouTube of people uploading old-timey tape collections that you probably otherwise would have had to give your parents' address to some shady person on an MSN chat room to get this match. But no, this... This man is a little window into a whole nother world that we were talking about earlier, but it was a great time. Would recommend. I wonder if the Silver Nugget still exists.
You know what? It probably doesn't. I'm gonna look. You continue. You vamp. I'm gonna look and see if this casino even fucking exists.
Okay. Well, Jeremy does his research. We jump over to the final match of the three match that. Again, as mentioned, Jeremy could not bring himself to watch, but that is completely understandable. As I said, this match is honestly one that I hadn't watched in a long time as well. I remember getting the DVD of this show, Born to be Wired, from, I think, Silver Vision was the name of the company. It was a UK company. Had to buy this. It wasn't officially licensed ECW DVD at that time in the early 2000s from Silver Vision. And I remember being so incredibly excited to finally watch this show after hearing the legend of it being the most violent match ever. And I think it definitely lives up to its reputation. But how has your research gone, my friend?
Silver Nugget closed. Permanent.
Boo. Well, another beautiful wrestling venue that I'll never get to go to. Oh well. But yeah, dude. Born to be
this
Wired.
Match is gross. This match is
it
gross.
Is gross. It is gross. So this is match of the week number 89: Sabu versus Terry Funk. Two of my all-time favorites. Took place August 9th, 1997, at the ECW Arena. A match that was so intense that even Paulie Dangerously did not do a rematch of it or do any more no ropes barbed wire matches in ECW from that point forward, as far as I'm aware, because I don't think anyone could possibly live up to this one. And I think that was a good call.
100%. Not just because it's so gross, because it legitimately nothing could live up with. The finish of this match is one of the most insane things I've ever seen.
Oh, it's incredible, dude. Like, this was the one. So I mentioned the last match. I was looking for what would be my official Sabu tribute match for the wrestling club bar show that I had at the Scratch that week. And this is the one I ended up going with to show a bar full of unsuspecting people.
No!
The most violent wrestling match to ever happen.
Oh my god, the one person I watched it with, I warned 100% before I started this thing. You asshole! Yeah.
Oh man. So
I love you, Chris.
I saved it to the end of the night, and throughout the evening I played like various clips kind of like hyping it up, you know, like the VHS ad of them. I think Paulie saying about how it was like one of the most dangerous things and the one that will never be repeated and the most extreme thing that ever happened at ECW and all this stuff, and a great Terry Funk promo that he cut, where most of it from that week's ECW Hardcore TV, most of it he's just going off on the Florida Cracker fans for no apparent reason. Just never.
You crackers!
Terry is just the best. But this match, man, I was a bit worried about playing it for a bar full of people, but I think I gave adequate warning for it, and so I think everyone knew what was coming, and it wasn't at the start of the night, which I'd had similar things. I'd played something way too violent early in the night, like this FMW Mr. Pogo match that he just did really gross things with his sickle, and I felt a little bit concerned over that. But this one I did give adequate warning, and I think everyone, it might have been a lot of people's first time seeing it, and I think people did get a kick out of it. But it's one of those matches where maybe you don't need to watch it more than once, and I think it's uncomfortable violence that is its real magic. And like I said, I've seen a lot of real violent, gross wrestling over the years. You know, CZW shit, you know, stuff in IWA Mid-South, or, I mean, yeah, the Wing promotion.
FMW
back
shit.
In the day. Yeah, but there's something about...
And I don't mean shit. When I say the word shit, I don't mean it's shit. I mean stuff. I apologize. Yeah. My language is not very good.
Of course, of course. I mean, it's some very different type of violence when you start talking about, like, your shoot style kind of stuff and UWF and... you know, Yoshiaki Fujiwara and Sayama and stuff, but this match...
Or that fucking match with fucking Don Fry and... who is it? What's his name?
Takayama.
Yes, yeah. Oh my god. They just tee off on each other for a good 5 minutes. It's nasty. Oh,
I mean, another contender, I'd say, that awesome Daisuke Ikeda versus Yuki Ishikawa match. Any of their matches, they just punch each other voluntarily in the face over and over again. Tremendous stuff. But this holds the holy grail for me of most violent match. And it's escalation. It's super interesting as well when you watch it, because Terry, for most of it,
it's worked
kind
well.
Of like the bad guy. And then it kind of flips a little bit. And then by the end, you just feel bad for everyone involved.
Especially at the very, very end, yeah. When this is a mass of humanity and barbed wire who cannot escape one another. It's like, it's Brundlefly, but it's fucking Terry Funk and Sabu as one being. It's disgusting.
Oh, that's amazing. And they just,
oh, I love it.
They
that's
move,
the, same
the worse it gets, and they just get like closer together, and they kind of kick out like a little bit, and then it keeps going, and he eventually just like pushes him down. And he has no way of kicking out, otherwise he'd probably, like, slice his artery or something.
Yeah, man. Seriously, some nasty shit, dude.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was really cool to rewatch, like, some things that stood out about it to me that were really cool was what a great job they did of, like, teasing the wire in the early part of it, like that real great kind of FMW building up the drama of like going into the wire.
The Irish whips up to the point where they literally have to stop inches away from going into it.
So good. Just that timeless kind of like build that you don't necessarily get in a lot of deathmatch stuff these days. It's more your Gonzo style. But yeah, this had like a real mystique about it. And then when they finally got into the wire, it just went up and up and up. I think the biggest thing that'll stay with a lot of people is that Air Sabu, where Sabu jumps off of the chair to get Terry, and Terry moves out of the way, and then he ends up in the wire. And that's where he slices the bicep, which is the other very big part about this. Apparently, I think this might hold the record for the most stitches any wrestler has ever needed to get after a match. I've read about this. I can't remember the exact number, but yeah, he basically tears his whole bicep, stretching sort of like under his pectoral, like all the way around, which when you watch this spot, you're just like, yep, okay, I could see that happen. And then he famously just tapes it up. Just, Fonzie, give me the tape, baby. And he just tapes that fucker up and keeps going while just trying to keep his muscles from falling out.
Sabu's arm required over 100 stitches. Over 100.
Yeah.
Man, holy fuck.
Insane shit. Like, and this is the match, I think, why I picked it as my official Sabu tribute match, because it captures just the pure insanity of this man. And as he would keep going.
Also take into account the insanity of Terry Funk. Like, yes. The fact that Terry at this age was willing to go into this match with Sabu. Like, what the fuck? Oh, you crazy bastard. Dudes from Texas are fucking out of their gourd, dude.
And this captures, like, such a great bit of Terry, because he's had, you know, so many barbed wire matches up to this point, you know, even dating back to, like, his feud with Dusty back in the day in Florida. And then of all of those, in all of the crazy shit he's done in FMW and then IWA in Japan, of all of the barbed wire stuff is done, I'd say this is definitely the craziest, and it's when he is in his mid-50s.
Yeah, I honestly, I've seen a couple barbed wire matches since, and every time I'm like, oh god, no. I'm gonna be scarred for life like these fucking guys. But none have lived up to this shit. They're like, none.
Man, it's nothing could touch it. It is, I would say, like, other than the gross outside of it, which I think is what the lore of a lot of this lives by. There is something about it that is a great match. Like, I think there's an intensity to it. The fact that of, like, bringing the ECW arena, the most, you know, like, hardcore, diehard, ruthless motherfuckers that have ever been as fans, to bring them to, like, a silence, to even, like, to get them to such a point of uncomfortableness, that is an accomplishment, my friend.
Like, they were literally like, please, for the love of God, cut these men apart. Let them escape. They don't deserve this anymore. They did this for entertainment. They're done. Please. Yeah, you're 100% right.
Man, this is just so
I literally, as soon as I saw it pop up, I'm like, I clicked the link, because this particular one didn't have the description, and I clicked the link, and it popped up as a board to be wired, like, no, I'm not doing it. I can't do it. I'm sorry.
Oh, dude, I remember looking so hard, because when I did this at Wrestling Club, I wanted to, like, play the version with the entrances, because that's how I originally remember watching it, and then Terry coming out to Desperado by the Eagles, which is just an incredible entrance theme.
Oh, and, fuck.
At this point, Sabu was coming out to Metallica. It was like before he had the famous kind of like, you know,
Indian stuff at the beginning. That one?
Yeah, I wish I could remember what one it was.
Because he had one that had some chanting at the beginning of it, and then went to like some weird shit, yeah.
Yeah, it was like FMW music was just sort of like generic Arabian music, which is pretty crazy.
That might be the one I'm talking about. Yeah.
So I had to find the version of this with like the full VHS rip from back in the day and then like edit it down to make sure I got the version where the entrance is, but I reckon it was worth it. But yeah, dude, the whole atmosphere of this is something else. Joey's commentary, I feel, on this really, like, you know, I think Joey gets some shit from a lot of people in his style of commentary, but I thought he brought like a rawness to this that really like was appropriate to the subject matter.
I honestly think people
offended as we were.
I think people give Joey a hard time because he's a one man booth. Like, they don't understand how much pressure it is to do that job alone. Like, you have to be color and fucking play-by-play. When I originally started doing wrestling commentary, somebody reached out like, all right, we want to be you to be the Joey Styles of this company. I'm like, no, I can't do that. No one can do that. That is hard. You can't simultaneously be color and fucking play-by-play as a single individual unless people love the shit out of you. And even Joey had a hard time.
The only two people I've ever seen really pull off one-man commentary are Joey Styles and Gordon Solie. Like, they are the only two.
Honestly, Gordon, most fans have never even heard him do play-by-play, underappreciated. Like, even by the current generation of fans, everyone else knows how great Gordon was, but people should go back and just listen to some. It was legitimate, like, sports commentary, but on wrestling. It's so good.
He had such a great, quaint kind of like old worldliness to it, and yeah, man, I think Joey just killed it on this. I'm a big fan of Joey Styles, and also I feel like he brought something really cool to that first match that we were talking about tonight as well. A lot of people forget Joey Styles was the voice of MLW back of the day as well.
Oh, that's very true. That's very true.
Yeah, man,
I love Joey.
I adore this match. This is just something else. If you haven't seen it, I would cautiously say make sure to
watch
go out
it
your
once.
Way to watch it.
Yeah. At least once. I, as disgusted as I am, and you can clearly tell, you have to watch it at least the single time. You have to.
It's like the cannibal Holocaust
if you respect
of professional wrestling.
I was going to say, you owe it to Sabu and Terry to watch this at least once, but you put it in a very more insane way, and I respect it.
Oh, brother, I'm glad we got to talk about this match, and I think it even adds to it the fact that you were, like, too gross feelings to actually rewatch it. I feel like that's appropriate.
I own the DVD, and I've never gotten back to watching that particular chapter ever again. Oh god,
yeah, I think this sums up the magic of both of these men in such a wonderful way, and a lot of the magic of ECW too. Something very
RIP to
heart.
Terry Brunk and Terry Funk.
Yes, agreed. I think this has been a great little send off to Sabu on the podcast here. This was the end of my series of Sabu matches of the week, but I was in the end just very happy to just watch a whole bunch of Sabu matches, and I hope his legacy lives on through everyone else that is like sometimes just feeling like, you know what, I just want to watch some Sabu matches right now.
Hey Chris, I know this is a match of the week podcast, but any chance we could possibly review this movie River of Darkness with Kurt Angle, Kevin Nash, and Sid Vicious?
That sounds tremendous. Especially because of Sid Vicious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what, actually? I've got some free time. We should bring back the old show and just review whatever nonsense we decide to review. What do you think?
Heck yeah. Yeah, dude. All right.
Let's do it, brother.
Absolutely. Return of Grown Men Watch This Shit. Coming to a podcast listening device near you.
No bullshit. The best podcast name ever for a wrestling podcast. Legitimately, we were cutting edge.
I'd like to think so. I'd be very happy to hear... what was our intro music again? Hear that one last time?
Oh, I don't even know.
You know the Family Guy bit with the bird? The bird is the word.
Oh, yes, yeah, we stole it from fucking 3-2-1 because the bird came out to that. Holy shit. Oh, memories.
Oh, good times. If there's anyone still listening who's come along the ride from there to this, shout out. Respect to the loyalty.
Love you.
There.
Love you, fans.
But on that note, I think it's time to wrap this up. Thank you so much, my friend. Do you have any plug skis for today?
Sure, of course. I have one for me, I am Jeremy Tate, a.k.a. James Vanderbeek, on Instagram and Twitter. On the other social media apps on similar handles, you can find me, I'm sure. And then I work for a little wrestling company called SOS Pro Wrestling. We are on IWTV. I do commentary over there. We just had an awesome show that is up there now called Endless Summer. Please give it a watch. And then we have a show coming up here at the Old Stove Brewery. This coming 26... Old Stove, and then, yeah, it's my birthday party. That's basically what's going on. But please, give a watch. You'll enjoy. It's silly and it's fun.
Also, Pentagonzo t-shirts.
Oh, shit. Please buy my wares. Pentagonzo.com. All kinds of nonsense up there. And I was thinking about doing a Booyaka 619 in the vein of... of Stone Cold 316. Is it 316? Yeah, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's 360. I'm just kidding. Pretending to be a wrestling fan. Stone Cold 316, but Booyaka 619 coming soon.
I thought you were going to go with sort of like a 69ing motif.
Gross. Like that's very immature. Very immature.
Here's a person. On that note, I'd like to say a big old thank you to Social Suplex, socialsuplex.com, the hub that lets us do this podcast, pays the bills, just to be able to get to do this. It's a nice little thing, and I appreciate them. If you want more wrestling audio in your life, go there. A bunch of other Rad Wrestling podcasts, from Keeping It Strong Style, their New Japan podcast, that may be the longest running New Japan podcast there is.
Shout out to Rich, shout out to Jeremy, shout out to fucking Josh. Those guys are rad as fuck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember when we got to hang out with them in Hooters in New York City that time. Oh. That was a fun time.
Yes.
We recorded a live podcast whilst I ate copious amounts of chicken wings.
Oh, got a hug with Session Moth. Very close to
that. Yeah. We had Jay White there at the...
Oh, you're fucking right. Holy shit. Future New Japan World Champion was there with us.
First time I ever met Kyle Fletcher. Give him a big old hug.
Holy shit. Oh, by the way, Davis, if you're listening to this, why do you want to follow me, dog? What's going on?
I don't know anything about that.
Just kidding, bro. Just kidding. I don't care. You're fine.
What was... I was in my spiel. One Nation Radio, the Trish and Sarah podcast, the Tunnel Talk podcast,
Tunnel Buddies,
Imps WWE Adventure, All Things Elite, the AEW Match Recommendation podcast. They got all the things, all the things. There may be new podcasts on there from the last time I looked at it, but it's a good time and I would recommend. Thank you, guys. ChrisThings.com.au is the place to buy my wares. To buy these Match of the Week illustrations as fancy art prints, to buy a t-shirt, to buy original paintings, all of the things, christhings.com.au and christhings on Instagram, and I believe on Twitter as well. But thank you, everybody, so much. Thank you for bearing with us through some technical difficulties that hopefully you won't even be privy to once I post
this. Luckily, they didn't realize how long some of those were, hopefully.
Oh my God.
It'd be so funny if you, like, legitimate time cuts, how long it took us.
Yeah, man. It was a fun time, guys. It was a fun time.
Love you, everybody. Appreciate it. Chris, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, my friend. It was also great to speak to you as always. And yeah, honestly, indeed, it would bring me great joy for us to have a reunion of the
dude, let's just do the show again. Let's make it happen. Fucking A, who cares? Yeah. Like, let's do it.
Yeah, dude. All right. Thank you, buddy. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you next week.
Adios.
Turkey Necks!